listeners. I'm Joni B. Cole, host of Author Can I Ask You? In each short conversation, I ask a writer a non-writing related question that lets you and me get to know them just a little bit better as a person. I'm an author myself, so I'm always looking for an excuse to ask the odd questions. Let's get started and meet today's guest. Today, I welcome poet and fiction writer Marjorie Matthews. Currently, Marjorie has a completed manuscript for her novel, Hawaii Calls, and she's finishing a second novel, The Red Wheelbarrow. Marjorie lives in Hanover, New Hampshire, just one town over the Connecticut River from me. Full disclosure, Marjorie is one of my favorite people in the world. Hey, Marjorie, I'm glad you're here.
Thanks, Joni. I'm thrilled to be here.
Oh, good. I have to confess, Margie, you're my very first guest on Author Can I Ask You?
Oh, I'm so honored.
Well, I'm honored to have you here. So are you ready for your non-writing related question?
Yes, I can't wait to hear what it is.
Okay. So Margie, your first novel, Hawaii Calls, centers on a character based on your grandmother, who worked for the Honolulu Star Bulletin in the 1930s. From your book, which, by the way, I love, I understand that your grandmother enjoyed a rather glamorous life as a gossip columnist. I also know that you yourself were born and raised in Hawaii, which sounds like a paradise to me, especially given the fact that here in New England, we're just heading into mud season. So, Marjorie, what I would like to ask you is this. Why in the world did you leave Hawaii?
Does that seem strange to you?
Right now, with like 12 degrees and a major wind chill, yes.
And it does to lots of people. I get that question a good bit. I get that question from people back home. Why are you living there? I have to admit that I came because my husband got a job at Dartmouth. And so I tagged along.
Are you saying love brought you here?
Well, yes, definitely love. And we're only married a year, so it was very much a honeymoon time. But I also had this real romantic sense of New England. It was a place that figured large in my childhood. And I can't for the life of me tell you why I thought Boston was the city of all cities and the place to live. But for some reason, even at age 10 or 11, I thought that going to boarding school in Boston would have been wonderful. And of course, I know enough people who did that to know that maybe it wouldn't have been very wonderful at all. But
yeah, I don't think many people romanticize boarding schools.
But for some reason, New England had a mystique for me. And so I was very excited to move here. And it certainly meant a very different world. And when you're 30 years old, that can seem very exciting, just the idea of something so different. So that was true. And then the reasons have changed with time. I think I've come to really appreciate the sense of seasons. And I knew coming in that I would experience that. I'd lived on the mainland a couple times before, but there's something quite magical about the fact that you are moving through these seasons and changes is always coming up. And actually, I would say March, like November, those are pretty wonderful months to me because you go from a season you might have gotten tired of and you start into a new one that has its own gifts. And I will admit that February and March can be long. It can take a long time to get to April and May. But I think there's a sensitivity, a sense of being tuned into nature that is very different. I didn't know what the solstices meant growing up in Hawaii, that there was no notion of, oh, guess what? Christmas and Easter are tied to natural changes in the world. And I didn't know that. And so I really come to care about that. But I also really value now that I think this is an area of civility, an area of true democracy. There just are many things about the lifestyle up here that I would not want to ever give up.
Well, I concur. It's a very lovely place to live. But I'm glad we could introduce you to the term solstice and mud season.
Yeah.
So what's one of your favorite memories, though, of back home? If I can still say Hawaii is home for you or has some sense of home for you.
Yeah, I suppose any place that has been your place of origin is definitely, and my family is there, so it's definitely got a sense of being home. The ocean is what I miss the most, the access to it, the sense of its constant presence. And that's a very visceral memory. The kinds of memories I have of what I'm missing are largely tied to Hawaii as it was in the 50s and 60s. And of course, Honolulu is nothing like that anymore. And so there's always a bit of sadness when I go back and see whatever the new changes are as it becomes increasingly not the Hawaii I knew. I definitely miss the food. I miss the variety of food. We finally had good Chinese in Hanover, which we hadn't had when I'd lived here for a long time. Yeah. And I was very excited when Korean food came and Japanese. Forever, it seemed we didn't have sushi here. So I miss that about Hawaii and my family. Father's there, my brother and all of his family. So
you're lucky you remembered to say that.
I know, my goodness, if I hadn't.
You think that you bring with you, even though you've been in this area for quite a long time, do you think you bring with you a Hawaiian sensibility at all?
Absolutely. I think there's so much about Hawaii that is distinct from and just unlike anything in the mainland. And it's a kind of cultural sensitivity to others. It was definitely different to grow up in a place where at least in my childhood, Caucasians or Haoles, as we say in Hawaii, were the minority, a very powerful minority, but a minority all the same. And there is such a blending in many great ways of the different cultures there. I think one of the reasons that I had such an affinity for Barack Obama, he went to the same school that I went to. And I think, especially in the school, Punahou, there was a kind of sensibility, sense of responsibility, and certainly a sense of inclusivity. Although I think as his experience shows, and as, you know, I look back and realize it was hardly as idyllic as we all like to believe, but I still think that it had a richness of an awareness of others that may not have been as present elsewhere in the country. Since I haven't lived there for 34 years, I don't think I can speak with any real authority on what it's like today. But I sense when I go back that there is still this real respect and celebration of all the people there, that there isn't that sense that one group rules over the others. I think it's probably still true, unfortunately, that probably the Caucasians, the power base is still the power base to some degree. It's still a good place.
Well, Marjorie, if I was to go on my dream vacation to Hawaii, mm-hmm. what is the number one thing you recommend I have to do or see?
Well, I always recommend, it's not again like it was when I was a girl, but to me, the place that I want to make sure I get to every time I go is to the Halekulani, and that shows up in the novel a good bit, and to what is called the room without a key, because it isn't a room, it's an open space right on the beach, and it's just the most beautiful place to watch the sunset. There's Hawaiian music, there are dancers. It's very different from what it was like when I would go there with my grandmother as a girl, but it's still, to me, magical. So that's at the top of my list.
It sounds lovely. And if I don't make it there, well, I can reread your book.
Well, there
you go. Absolutely does so capture Hawaii, you know, several decades ago, but it's just transporting. So Marjorie, do you have any phrases you can lay on us that are Hawaiian phrases? What are some of your favorites that you drop into conversation sometimes?
I think of the words that we use normally in conversation growing up, which I don't know are used as much if that were something that was more true in the 50s, but puka, which is whole, you know, was used. I would say I use that word instead of whole as a child. Kaukau was supper food. Pilikia, you knew things were bad if there's pilikia, because that meant you were in trouble. You were the problem. You were pilikia. Of course, wahine for female, kane for man. Aloha is used a lot, of course, in the tourist trade, especially. Ohana, the sense of family, that belonging.
Oh, that's lovely.
And pauhana is the end of work. I think that's used a lot.
Well, I hope that no matter where we live, we can have a sense of ohana.
Yes.
We bring it with us wherever we go.
Right.
And now, Marjorie, the time has come for the last question I like to ask every guest on the show, which is this. If you were going to write a 6-word memoir, what would it be?
This is such a great question and such a difficult one to answer, but this is what I came up with. I seek to accept, not expect.
Marjorie, that sounds exactly like you. My gosh, you managed to capture yourself in 6 words. Really, though, it's philosophical, it's beautiful, it's actionable, and it's so perfectly you.
Thank you.
Well, Marjorie, I certainly learned a lot more about you, and I learned a lot more about Hawaii. So thank you.
Oh, my pleasure.
It's always a pleasure to talk with you. Luckily, I get to talk to you almost every week since we swap writing. So
it's the great joy of my week, my Tuesdays with Joni.
Mine too. Seriously, I want to thank you and aloha.
Aloha.
Listeners, if you want to find out more about Marjorie and her books, please check out her awesome website, MarjorieNelsonMatthews.com. So that's it for this episode of Author, Can I Ask You? Thanks everybody for listening. And if you like what you heard, please spread the word and visit my website, JoniBCole.com. In the meantime, take care, act civil, and don't be afraid to ask the odd questions.